Okay, great. So I think probably that's all we have today. We have Malini from VMware, myself, Tingyu from Dell, and we have Brian from Intel, and Paul and Philips.
Yeah. Hi, this is Paul and myself here from ARM.
Your volume is a little bit low, so I'm not sure if
I... Say something again, Nebu.
Can you guys hear me okay now? Or?
Yes.
It sounds like you're really, really low bandwidth. It's
okay.
Terrible quality.
Let me dial back in, guys. Give me just a sec, okay?
Oh, wait a minute. It just cleared up. Try one more time.
Is it okay now?
I like it.
Okay. It's good for me.
Yeah. Yes, that's perfect. Thank you.
So, Paul, were we waiting on Mark as well, or are we good to go?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Did Mark accept?
Yeah, he's just joining.
Oh, okay. Mark is coming in. Okay, that's great.
Great. I should be in now. Hi, guys. Mark here.
Hello.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark. This is Tim here. So we just introduced everybody. So probably most people already know each other, but I think it's better. We can give maybe everybody a couple more minutes so we can introduce ourselves. I know Malini and Brian and me, we've been working together for a while. And Paul, I think we met you last time during the face-to-face meeting.
That's right. Yes, I joined the Hanoi Planning Conference and presented Parsec in the lightning talk in the unconference session.
Yeah, I think that is the idea why we have the meeting today. And Philip and
Hi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hey guys, this is Nebu. Also with ARM, part of the infrastructure business unit, responsible for our edge computing strategy. So we have been working with EdgeX or beginning to work with EdgeX in the past few months. We've been exploring a few ways to collaborate within the EdgeX platform. So we definitely see security as one area, right? So we've been exploring some other initiatives with them. So nice to meet you all.
Great, welcome. And I see Mark over here as well. So
yeah. Hi, everyone. Yeah, this is Mark here. I'm also from ARM and a part of the infrastructure team and looking at this project Parsec and the intersections with the ecosystem. So I'm helping to bring the story out and work with various companies that are adopting or want to participate in this project.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you very much, guys. We will just start our meeting since we have everybody here. For today, I guess the major topic we have is kind of a preparation or kickoff for the next step for the or TPM or kind of hardware hardening design or implementation, the cooperation. Brian has been working on this part of, I would say, quite a few time. So Brian, do you want to just kind of take over and give us some kind of introduction so that we can...
Sure. So I'll kind of explain how we got here. Back in, what was it? Was it 2018? Fall of 2018? I think it was fall of 2018.
Yeah, that's about
that. The leader of the security working group was David Fiera. Who is apparently on his LinkedIn, he's now the IAM web service product owner at Amazon Web Services. But before that, he was CTO of this company called ForgeRock, which was a identity management products vendor. And his proposal was to do some hardware-based secret storage for EdgeX. And so he wrote a proposal. And it didn't really get anywhere. And the reason it didn't get anywhere, basically you had this proposal is that you basically propose a plug-in API to encrypt or decrypt a secret And that was kind of where he left it. And it never went anywhere. And one of the primary reasons that it never went anywhere is the EdgeX project today does not have a good way to support plugins. We've looked at a couple different, like Go plugins, and we've looked at like HashiCorp plugins, and those are the only two we've looked at, but we haven't really found a good plugin technology that EdgeX wanted to adopt. And so that API that proposal wanted to use was not really easily implementable. At the same time, I did a threat model of the secret storage subsystem for EdgeX, which was sitting in an adjacent repository in EdgeX. It was kind of like these optional components that you could install, you know, based on Vault. And I've been working in this Geneva release to harden. So in Fuji release, we actually moved that repository into the EdgeX Go monorepo. And made Vault one of the components that are in the Docker Compose files. And I think we also seeded like the MongoDB passwords. In Geneva release, we added a Vault tokens for every microservice and an ACL so that each microservice has its own scoped ACL for its services secrets. And did that. And then the next step is to secure Vault because the Vault, when you initialize Vault, it gives you a master encryption key that you then need to play back to Vault. Of course, Vault's usage model is that it would be like on a separate physical machine or you have some kind of operator where it does the Samir secret sharing, you split the secrets and you have the operator, you know, come in and provide the secrets and unseal the vault, which is great for cloud, but it isn't terribly useful for a headless IoT scenario. And so my proposal is how can I kind of get David Fiera's secrets proposal and kind of marry that with the secret management. And that's where I got with the EdgeX Vault proposal. And so the idea is from, you know, just to recap, the proposal is so that we don't store the Vault master key in a Docker volume unencrypted. The idea is to take some input key material, run it through a key derivation function, and use that derived key for encrypting that Vault secret. And then because of the lack of plugin, make a very, very simple interface to take as input that input key material, which should come from some, you know, hardware secure source that's, you can't just, you know, go in, steal the hard drive out of the box and, you know, steal all the secrets off of it. So the some kind of hardware backed secure storage to provide that input key material to the Vault unsealing process, and then that will bind the Vault to some kind of hardware root of trust. And so that's what that. So then I have a pending PR where I've done a trial integration of some hooks to supply the input key material to encrypt that key. And so that's where we are today.
And that, so Brian, that hook to supply the IKM, that's literally just an executable, right? It's a binary of some kind that's got to be found in a certain folder, and it's called IKM, and you just run it, and it gives you your bytes.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, what it is, it'll have there'll be a configuration file in the TOML. Basically, it'll have the path to the executable, and then it. Or no, is that right? Or let me think here. Oh, no, it was an environment variable.
Right.
Yeah, it was an environment variable and you set it to the path, the executable, and it'll run it. And I can't remember whether or not I had some additional configuration where you could pass arguments or whatnot. But yeah, that's the gist of it.
And was the expectation for that IKM to be effectively a random number payload coming from a TRNG, or is that a private key of some kind that's stored?
Yeah, it's effectively a random. It's basically a persistent random number that's unique to that device. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me share my screen. I think we have the PR open effect, right?
But I want to make one other point, Paul and the ARM folks. EdgeX, like in its early days, was Java-based, and we have conscientiously moved towards Go to reduce the footprint. So any solution we're looking for, we'd also like it to be Go-based to maintain that size. And our most recent and the last other Java piece that we had that we evicted from our code base was a rules engine. And now we have everything in Go at this point.
Yeah, though keep in mind that just to modify that, you know, the idea with the containers is that it is language independent. Mm-hmm. We heavily leverage the static compilation feature of Golang to make sure that whatever the base container that we need to run stuff in, it works. We've been trying to not have any libc dependencies either. Though if it is something is fully containerized, it could pick whatever runtime it wanted. but we're trying to make sure everything's in Golang for the project supported stuff.
So Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but the main intended use case for Vault is a service for secure storage. Is that a fair?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And so right now the Vault has two functions right now. The first function that it has is for MongoDB or Redis passwords. Okay. For every service. It also stores the external TLS certificate for the Kong reverse proxy. And lastly, it's going to be used for the application services SDK for application level secrets. So, when people write their EdgeX applications that plug into the framework, mm-hmm. they use the application's SDK and they write their service, the response, and then connect up to the other EdgeX microservices to do their custom logic. So if those applications, for example, needed to store a credential to their upstream enterprise
they could use
the Vault connection to be able to store their application secrets, and as part of the interface to their service, they'd provide a way to set the secret, and then it would be stored in Vault from then on.
Paul, maybe a question for you. So the idea behind Parsec would probably be like sort of a half level abstracted above a use case like secure storage, right? It's more like a hardware implementation abstraction layer.
There are a couple of things here, right? So the first is that we're not talking about Parsec replacing Vault, right? I mean, right. Vault right. is the secret store in this use case, and the what we're looking at, I think, is whether there is a role for Parsec to hardware abstract the hardware dependent piece of Brian's proposal. Mm-hmm. And I think that is either simply the IKM generation. So that could be, so for example, a hardware independent interface to hardware TRNG and some limited non-volatile storage, maybe, because it's got to be persistent.
Yep.
The other thing that's interesting, I guess, is whether using Parsec to run any of the KDF pieces would be of value.
Okay.
As well, we'd have to think a little bit more about that. I guess what we're trying to do here, at least initially, or at least from my perspective, is to see if there is something minimal we can draw a circle around that lets us use the pieces of Parsec that we've already built. What is the path of least resistance that might allow us to bring Parsec in to actually add value without bringing in lots and lots of heavyweight engineering at the same time? And the IKM piece here is already pretty well abstracted, right? There is already the ability to effectively replace it with any implementation you like. So an implementation based on Parsec might be an early goal for something we could try to integrate.
Okay, thank you.
Right, and one of the reasons, I agree with that, and one of the reasons that I chose to use the IKM and a KDF is there may be, besides the vault key, there may be other initial secrets that we may want to secure. So maybe if you had something like if EdgeX at some point decided to support Docker Swarm and we needed to secure the Swarm join token or something like that, we could essentially use the same root secret, derive a new key and protect that other thing.
Right, I see. So it then becomes a kind of generalized bootstrapping secret.
Exactly, a generalized bootstrapping secret.
Provider of bootstrapping secrets to the system as a whole rather than necessarily to... Yeah, okay, so that makes sense. So the Parsec functionality that exists today, as of right now, is more based around key pairs. So it's not geared up to generate random byte arrays as output payload at the moment. It's geared up towards provisioning, say, RSA or ECC key pairs. So to use Parsec as a portable root of trust layer against something like a TPM. So at the moment we have interfaces to provision a public and private key to keep the private key locked in hardware and to export the public piece, and then to perform crypto operations with the private piece, like to sign digests effectively. Right. Now the functionality you need for IKM, I guess, is a little different from that, or could you actually use a key pair of that type as your IKM, or is that not useful?
No, I think you could use that. Because essentially, if you take a look at like what a TPM does for like secret sealing, right, it generates a key pair, right? It wraps some data using that key, right? And then returns you an encrypted blob.
Yes.
And if you have some kind of non-volatile storage, you could then store that blob in the TPM, or you could store that blob on disk. And so I think that functionality of wrapping a key pair is useful, because you could just use that key pair to wrap a random secret and then provide it back when asks.
Okay, let me just see. I just want to make sure I don't want to paint myself into a corner here and come up with an infinite recursion of needing secrets. It's so easy to do that in this kind of situation. So I guess so ultimately there is a private key stored in the TPM.
Paul, let me know if you need to share your screen so I can stop from the side.
I don't have anything to share at the moment. I need to think about that a little bit, but it sounds like it's at least a possibility, right? So,
yeah, provided essentially what you would need is you basically need an encrypt, and encrypt with public key and decrypt with private key, and give me the data back, right?
Yeah. So at the moment, the APIs we have surfaced through the Parsec service are all just sign and verify, so that. So we would need to add functionality. So there is no doubt, I don't think, that some engineering work would be required. I'm just trying to figure out exactly what primitives would be required.
And there's no secure storage right now for non-volatile storage interface either.
There isn't an interface for non-volatile storage. No, that's not something we've added yet. Our expectation is that non-volatile storage is kind of implicit in the underlying platform provision for key provisioning. So if you create a private key and your hardware looks like an HSM, then that private key will be in non-volatile storage on the HSM. If your root of trust is a TPM, then your private key will be a wrapped key, so it will never exist in the clear outside of the TPM. So it's effectively in non-volatile storage, but in a kind of implicit sense. It's usually not physically stored on the TPM chip because TPMs don't really do that, or they don't do that very well. What you have instead is you'd have a they have limited space. They can do it, but usually the space is very limited. So what you normally have instead is the key gets encrypted with a root key that's inside the TPM, and then you store the encrypted key anywhere you like. In storage that's kind of up to you, on disk or wherever. But the point is, you can't then use that key. You can't steal the key because it's on disk. It's no good to anybody unless they load it back onto the TPM, where it can be unwrapped and then used.
Right.
So you can conceptualize it as being stored on the TPM, but there's a physical implementation detail that means it's not actually stored on the TPM. Now, with something like a random number, of course, that's not what you want, because in that case you really would have to store it on the TPM, because if it's not a wrapped thing, if it's not encrypted, right. If it's not encrypted by anything, then you don't want to store it off the hardware. Otherwise, you've suddenly lost all of your benefits of using a TPM at all. So. I need to think a little bit about the precise set of primitives you'd need and how we'd sequence them together.
Then I have another question. Yes, so this would be something that would protect the Vault key that encrypts the other keys that we are saving inside Vault. How do we talk to this entity? Is it like a library that we'll integrate with our Vault container, or would it be yet another microservice? And then once you have another microservice, you have to have all that issue of like secure communications with it.
I think the answer to that largely depends on how this IKM plugin, if you want to call it a plugin, mm-hmm. interfaces with the rest of the world, right? Because ultimately there is the need for that IKM, which I think, doesn't that just write to standard output?
Yeah, it just writes the standard output. Yeah.
Okay, so there is going to be exposure of that sequence of bytes through a pipe or socket of some okay. kind to your cake. So the KDFs can actually process it.
So then,
inside
a container, if we did it, then that standard out is only visible to that container. So it does imply that we could get enough security by having it integrated as a library inside that container. Am I correct, Brian, here?
Oh, you better re-ask the question. Sorry. I was kind of reflecting what Paul was maybe going to say. You can ask it again.
Okay. So if it's writing to a pipe, to the standard out, every container has its own standard in, standard out, right? So if I make a call as a library call to this IKM producer, it would be secure within the Vault container, Vault initialization container.
Process, standard out of a process is
fine.
Is going to flow through the kernel. And we're not really protecting against threats from the kernel anyway. Yeah. So.
Okay, we're all set there then.
Okay.
And then, Paul, you're going to mention something about the back end of the IKM.
Yes. So I guess I'm just trying to get a feel for what the anatomy of IKM would look like if it was Parsec-based. Now, currently, the way you talk to Parsec, so Parsec surfaces a set of contractual APIs that are based on PSA crypto. And those are exposed through a wire protocol that operates over some kind of transport, and the only transport that exists that's supported today is a Unix domain socket transport. So there is the need for a client piece that understands the wire protocol to transmit and receive bytes on that socket to understand the inputs and outputs of Parsec. Now, what we want to do with Parsec in the long term is we want to build, as I was saying in my talk the other week, is we want to build up this whole ecosystem of client libraries for consuming the Parsec service in popular programming languages. Mm-hmm. And we want to build that up in such a way that it's very idiomatic and very fluent to consume. So if you're consuming it into, say Golang or Rust, mm-hmm. it's surfaced up to you in a way that's still PSA crypto, but re-expressed in the language in such a way that you could consume it elegantly and it wouldn't look like a big, horrible, clunky binding.
Nebu.
Oh, bye. Yep. See you, Nebu. Now, we haven't built that ecosystem of libraries yet, right? It doesn't exist, and only some pieces of it are starting to exist in a kind of embryonic state. We're building up just enough pieces to do some of the product integrations that we want to do internally within ARM. So we're actually building the client side of this very piecemeal, just as we're building the server side very piecemeal. The Golang library that exists today is not really in a usable state. It's only really a code sketch at the moment. So if there is a need to consume, if there is a need for a generalized client library to Parsec that is Golang based, there would need to be significant engineering investment in the Golang client library, which is a roundabout way of saying that I wonder whether for IKM, given that the functionality we want is so limited, IKM just has one job to do. It's a very modular piece.
Yep.
I'm wondering whether it might be less effort to produce a kind of custom client piece that talks to Parsec directly on that wire protocol without lots of lovely language specific ergonomics around it, but just a way to call the two or three functions that are needed in a very targeted way.
Or if you made a library, I mean, it's okay to say all the rest of the methods are not implemented except for this IKM one. With iteratively, we believe.
Well, I've done some prototyping, and I've found, and based on your problems with like JQ and curl, the reason I did the standalone executable was exactly because it's language independent, and so the real difficulty comes when you have a libc dependency because of the container runtimes that are available. If you have a statically linked C binary or whatever, that's probably going to be the most easy to integrate, because you can drop a binary into a Docker volume somewhere, right? You can just inject it, or you can mount it from the host, or you can do something. And then you can just call it from within the container and it'll do its job, as long as it only depends on the kernel ABI. Mm-hmm. It'll do its job. And I've also not found any problems, connecting to a Unix domain socket. Like we have our system management agent exposes the Docker socket to a container. That's not a problem. Going to like a device, like the TPM device directly, is also not a problem. That works just fine in a container. Some things that end up being difficult is we've done some products on, ever heard of Rancher? It's container OS. When you get to these container OSs, it becomes very difficult to add things that are running on the host, because it's really designed for the only process the host OS runs is just Docker, so if you depend on things like systemd or other services running on the host, it becomes difficult to integrate them if you wanted to run AIGX on a container-based OS. So those are the things I've experimented with and what I've found successful and not. So.
Okay.
So Brian's giving you multiple options to get to it. And I suggested if you're going to do the library, you could even do a very like not implemented except for one method.
Yes, I mean we could certainly take an approach like that with the client library, but it might not just be a case of implementing some methods and not others, because with our whole approach to client libraries, there's a bit of a philosophy around them. There's a design exercise in even just deciding what the client library should look like in order to be an ergonomic and natural layer. So I think if we really want to optimize this and solve the problem quickly, I think I would probably be tempted to bypass that whole design process.
Okay.
And just aim for something that just talks the few specific methods using whatever code we like, whether that's written in Go or Rust. I mean, the wire protocol is documented. It's all based on opcodes and return results and byte buffers. It's quite a straightforward wire protocol to understand. The question I think would be, if we're going to use Parsec for IKM, then where does Parsec itself run the service? Are we looking at running that in a container of its own, which I suppose would be one possibility, especially if you wanted to repurpose it for other things later. And if it's in a separate container from where the IKM piece runs, then what kind of primitives do we use to make sure the domain socket that we're talking to Parsec through is not only correctly bind mounted to both containers so that they both agree on what it is and they can share it, but also what are the correct primitives to secure that channel as well, is something like an operating system ACL on that socket sufficient, or do we need something else? That might not be a question we can answer on this call, but I think it's a question we probably have to pose.
Sounds like good questions. I agree.
The other thing I do want to cover, one other thing, and it's a bit of a sidetrack, but while I think of it, before I forget, is this Vault master key design proposal, is this the only proposal that is kind of on the table in terms of abstracting platform secure hardware? Because I seem to recall when I was in the Hanoi planning conference the other week, there was talk of some design work around portable root of trust or abstract root of trust APIs being in scope for Hanoi. And I just want to check, is that the same thing, or is that...
You're talking to the one and only author of anything root of trust here. That's
yeah. So yeah, this is that proposal, sort of. And so maybe a better way to say it is, maybe it kind of started off, 2 years ago as kind of a big hardware root of trust, crypt everything in hardware. And I kind of whittled it down. Let's just solve this one problem.
Okay. Sounds like some good whittling. Yes. Okay.
Right. So it doesn't cover device identity, persistent device identity. It's unforgeable, yep. and things like that. It's just tactical. We have an urgent problem right now with the secret store being completely exposed. Let's solve that.
Okay. Yeah. So really, that was just a way of my double checking that this is the problem we want to focus on, and there isn't something else that might be
Yeah, I think there's opportunity to tackle those other things, but there's no other proposals on the table right now.
Right. Okay. No, that's cool. That's good to know, because it means we can basically just pull all of our mental resources into trying to tackle this one. So the as it happens, the Parsec service itself is written in Rust, not in Go. Mm-hmm. We chose Rust because we just felt that it was.
Mm-hmm. More and more are choosing that for its security aspects, yeah?
Yeah, it just felt like it isn't really fully established yet as being the systems programming language of choice for security, but its trajectory is heading that way, and I was kind of trying to intercept the future, I guess, a little bit with this project. So that's why we chose it. And we, you know, wanted something with predictable performance and good safety and concurrency characteristics. So that's why we went with it. I don't see any reason why a Rust-based service can't run on EdgeX.
It can. It's like Brian mentioned, you know, we're a collection of microservices. Each microservice can be in any language of our choice. It doesn't matter. So that's not an issue. A question is, how large is the footprint of such a service?
Yes. Okay. So that's data I'll need to gather. It's not bloatware. It's a pretty slim piece.
Okay.
It's not pulling in vast numbers of dependencies and bits of runtime support.
Okay.
It does use a runtime. It's not free of runtime libraries, but it's not too. I don't think it's going to be too big for this use case. Let's put it that way. I mean, we fully are aiming it at edge mm-hmm. platforms.
Okay. Paul, I have another question.
Sure.
So when we're looking at edges, and I like to use this water droplet comparison, they can be the size of a snowflake, a water drop, a whole bucket of water, whatever. How much does the price point get affected when you're looking like at a Raspberry Pi with maybe some kind of secure storage on it like this?
I'm not sure that's a question I'm going to be able to answer. Pricing of systems is not a.
So, but today, as
not really a sphere I move in at the moment.
But today, is it something that's available in the market? Like you get Intel servers with a TPM on them, you know, and then there are varieties of them. You can have the hardware TPM that adds like, you know, in the times when I was looking like $30. Then there's the firmware TPM, the software TPM. Are there like Raspberry Pi type of ARM CPUs with a little bit of something like a TPM on them? And I'm just curious because if I do like a POC with these sort of things, how much would it change the price in? And that's fine that you don't know it.
No, so what I can tell you is that there is such thing as a Raspberry Pi with a TPM, not built in, but you can add a hardware TPM to a Raspberry Pi. I know because we've done that in our team. Huh. It's actually the platform we've been using to test our TPM integration on. We've done TPM testing with software emulated TPMs, but we've also done real hardware testing, and we used an Infineon kind of outboard TPM with GPIO pins. You seat it on the GPIO pins in a Raspberry Pi and configure it up and install the required trusted software stack to talk to it, mm-hmm. And you can. You can have that running pretty easily. Of course, you've also got the option of using trusted applications as well. So, I guess on a Raspberry Pi, I'm not quite sure what the
Raspberry Pi does not implement Trust Zone.
Yeah, it doesn't.
They have not implemented the hardware.
No.
I've actually went out and priced some of the ARM boards, like the Freescale NXPs. They got a couple others that compete on those, and they're a few hundred dollars. I didn't see anything that was like under $100.
Okay.
Security is expensive.
Yeah. So I was going to say, because with TrustZone, you do have the option of running software services behind TrustZone, but you're right, I'm not on the Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi gives you approximately 50% of TrustZone. It implements some of the exception states or whatever are needed, but it doesn't actually, as I understand it, it doesn't actually propagate the magic secure bit to all of the peripherals it talks to, so it's not actually proper Trust Zone. It's kind of gets you halfway there, but halfway is not useful. You can put TPM. I can't remember how much I paid for the TPM that I put on our Raspberry Pi, but it was a few pounds, I think.
Okay.
As I remember, I'd have to go back and look it up. I mean, I don't know whether Raspberry Pi is with outboard, with attached TPM chips are likely to be used in the industry.
Okay, no problem.
But it can be done. It's possible.
Okay, so what are our next steps?
Okay, so I think I need to go away and think about this a little bit more.
Okay, IKM. We need only IKM. Then a simple way, like via protocol-based way to get to it.
Yes.
And then how, if we ran it as a separate microservice, the IKM server, how would the EdgeX Vault consumer of this IKM talk to this IKM server?
Yes.
It's actually secret setup that needs to talk to it. We're running the stock vault.
Okay, right. Okay.
Or secret store setup, sorry. Vault worker. It's not in the Docker file.
I think one of the useful outcomes from this meeting is that we are at least we're pretty well aligned on using the IKM does seem to be where we can add value here. Right, which was kind of my suspicion going in, but it's good to have that confirmed, or that's what I'm hearing anyway. I think we're confirming that. So now that we have one thing to focus on with some certainty, then I think the thing to do is for us to go away and just have a think and try to put a little bit more flesh on the bones, a little bit more detail in place. And I would be happy to take the action from this meeting to write up a proposal.
Sounds good. Mark, do you want to add anything else?
No, I think this is great. I think identifying where we can add value with Parsec in this project is ideal, and the fact that Parsec is open source and also, you know, available for everybody, I think it's something we can all look at and participate in.
So something else we should probably also talk about before we close is availability of engineering bandwidth for things. I mean, we can go away and we could write a proposal. It's clear this is going to be a non-zero amount of work. And that work is likely to reside in a few different places, right? There could be the need to extend the service with new APIs, maybe. There could be the need to extend, say, the TPM backend, if TPM is the platform that we're particularly interested in. Maybe writing a custom client piece that is targeted for this particular use case. You know, if we can come up with a technical proposal and we cost it, and the cost of that work is let's suppose it's some weeks of engineering effort, where does that engineering effort come from? You know, is the engineering team for EdgeX Foundry already completely booked up? I mean, what flexibility exists here in
Typically, what happens is it's a very volunteer project with a few resources assigned by different companies. In fact, with VMware, I'm just a half person and there's one other person. So it's like very limited. And we might even lose some resources from Dell, Tingyu being one of them. So we are resource trapped. That's how I would put it. Right. And then I have another question here. ARM is interested in Parsec. So does ARM have its own version of TPM? I mean, there has to be some value to you for doing this, right? Is that a motivation or adequate incentive for you to invest engineering resources?
Well, so to be clear, we absolutely do have engineering resources invested already. But they, the situation on our side is kind of similar to the situation on yours in that, you know, we're pretty busy. It's not that we have a version of TPM per se. In fact, we are integrating with TPM, as one of the first phases of this. And also there's benefit to us for integrating, say, trust zone services, as well, like in the future. The first production integration that we're targeting currently is actually an internal one. That's Pelion, and we're working on that right now. And that's, you know, taking up that's our primary piece of engineering bandwidth taken up right there on that piece of work.
I have another question. Our things are about like a 6-month release cycle. Is there any chance that you can like stage this effort after your Pelion work? Because we still have like a 6-month window. If we kind of have a pretty much like knocked out API type of thing, and then you could get to it later.
So when you say 6 months, though, is
so
six
so we're gonna have
the entire release?
Yeah. So our current release is out maybe like tomorrow, day after, by the end of this week, okay? And then the next one will be 6 months out. The face-to-face you came for where we were deciding on the roadmap,
sure,
that'll come out a 6 month later. So if your Pelion gets done in a couple of months, then you'll still have time to hit the next release.
And in that 6 month cycle, what's the kind of proportion of active development versus what you might call closed down development? Is there a kind of feature freeze or a code freeze date within that 6 month?
The code freeze lasts for about a month at the end.
Yeah, where we do full integration tests. Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, you got we're talking about end of September. Everything should basically be in there probably by end of September. Giving October time to for stabilization and a November release.
And this is what Brian created in the project, the kind of a Kanban board. So as you can see, we have something inside the icebox. So before we start a new release cycle, we just evaluate them. We just put them into the different label. If it's labeled as for the next release. I think we have some of them like this one. So that means we are going to just include this one into the next feature. So things like even you cannot start from tomorrow, but once it's awaiting the next release scope, so we still can get time to finish that. So that's just how that works recently for the past release.
So all the committed items will have the EdgeX Hanoi milestone on them. We do have an open ticket with the DevOps team to synchronize the milestone across all the projects. That's why some have labels and some have milestones, but we're working on it.
And how is commitment decided upon? How do you actually commit a ticket into a release? And is there any kind of smaller scale sprint or scrum cycle within
Not
that
really.
6 months?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that was what the planning meeting was for.
We're pretty fluid about that, yeah.
Right. And we're trying to get better about under-promising and over-delivering. It's been a problem for the security team in the past. We've held up the releases, so we're trying to really constrain what we say we're going to do so that you can deliver it. And so we have to have a good idea who's going to be working on what pretty well, you know, at the start of the release cycle in order to get things done. So we're getting better at it. We're not perfect.
So we have the design, we have the implementation, and then we'll have the QA piece where we'll integrate some of the tests with this with Black Box. And then currently we use some systems, you know, from Linux Foundation. And if they don't have the TPM, we'll have to make sure they get a TPM on their systems and which are those machines so we can run these sort of hardware tests on them next.
Sure. And just as a thought experiment, which will help me understand the process a little bit, I hope. If, let's suppose we were not having this meeting. Let's suppose there was no Parsec or you weren't, for some reason, you just didn't want to integrate with Parsec. What was the plan otherwise? Was it just to just not do this piece of work yet, or was there some other...
Let me speak here. Like Brian is the one who's been doing the most on this TPM and this hardware abstraction. And it's been like 2 years since David Ferreira was here. And then from last August, it was like a dream that we'd like to do it. So there was like a design meeting. There were some design things. So it's been sitting in the ice box as a design thing. It's want to do... We need to get there. So it's suffered on the resource front.
Right.
And so what we did is we said, okay, let's at least get some secrets sitting in vault so they're not willy-nilly everywhere. And then let's get down to the next layer of the cake, which is, can I save it in hardware and so on and so forth. And that's why there was an initial proposal from Brian. So he's been like working crazy. And that was a design we had. And if you want, you can take a look at it. A few weeks back, he even like hurried up and completed it before the Hanoi face-to-face so we could share with the ARM folks that design. So it's been suffering on the resource front. And another thing that's higher priority in our current Hanoi milestone is with all security things, there's a lot of high touch dependencies. A has to happen, then B, then C. So previous release, what we did is we kind of like had some tighter integration there saying, hey, check on this, is that done next, you know, sort of stuff. And this next release, what we're thinking is we have a setup phase where we do all of that first. And then when all of it is done and set, you know, like the secret store has its secrets for Mongo and Redis and all the TLS certs are there for each of the microservices and it's all stable, then we say, let's maybe start the next set of microservices. So they have what they need. So in the, let's say about 1 year back, it was like, hit or miss, and we had to start our services manually to be sure things were up. Last release, we got it better with some more scripting and code to check on these sub processes. And this next release, we want to have a very clear cut preset phase and then the setup phase.
Okay, so if again, I'm just angling for understanding the process here. So we know. We know kind of towards the end of the release, so end of September, you want to get to a code freeze date and you want to start close down and like final integration testing.
Yes. Yeah.
But at what point does this feature, if we are going to integrate Parsec, let's just say that's a feature. Uh-huh. At what point do we need to have decided concretely one way or the other whether we're going to commit that in or...
Okay.
Is there a point in the process where we have to make that decision?
Okay. So here's my assumption that I've been working on is that the EdgeX project is not going to carry every possible hardware root of trust solution. So the EdgeX Foundry GitHub is not going to want to have the TPM plugin, an HSM plugin, a Trust Zone plugin, that kind of thing. And so my thought process is the GitHub EdgeX Foundry repo has the hook, and then those other plugins would be released as their own open source projects for someone to integrate into their into an EdgeX-based solution.
I see.
So, you know, I don't think an actual hardware binding would be dictated by the EdgeX schedule. It'd be nice if you could actually show something working at the end of a release cycle, but I think the important thing is to get the hooks in there, and then the stuff that is, you know, hardware specific, people can go out, pull and integrate, you know, on their own as part of productizing an EdgeX platform.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. So you kind of have there's a systems integration phase where you're pulling the out of the box EdgeX Foundry, but then you go and pull some replaceable pieces, and the IKM piece would be one of them.
Right. So like companies like IoTech, like Jim White, they're actually building a commercial EdgeX platform.
I see.
And I've seen things go each way. So with OpenStack, what happened is they would have a special stuff for different storage vendors. And there's the API and then the actual plugins from the different storage vendors. And we'd have to have tests from them to be sure they break. And then there would be sometimes a vendor not keeping their system up to date and things like that. So that's one approach. And with Kubernetes, they have connections for different cloud service providers like Google and Amazon and all that. So where your Kubernetes cluster runs. So it's sometimes better to just keep the basic minimal stuff together and have the other vendors maintain their pieces.
I see. And does the IKM hook actually exist today? Does that part of it exist with some default implementation, or does that in itself need to be created?
No, okay. It is sitting on a private branch. I don't have the pull request actually official yet. I have had it reviewed by internally by our by other security architects, and the requirement for me contributing the code is that I not have a default software implementation. So basically it's just hook only with no default implementation.
What does a hook with no default implementation look like if it's an executable though?
Well, basically it's an environment variable, right? You call this executable to get the IKM, but there's no IKM that like it is a software emulation or anything like that. It's just, Here's the hook. You have to implement it yourself. We're not going to provide a default.
Okay, right. So if the environment variable is not set, then you fall back on whatever you're currently doing, I assume, which is getting it
exactly unencrypted.
Right.
Just it's on the Docker volume as it is. Yeah.
Understood. Okay. 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 So,
right.
So
I have a hard stop.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we are at time. Yeah, we should probably stop, and let me take this away and think about it, and I will try to write up my thoughts.
Okay. Thank you guys.
See it's good talking to everybody as well. Yes. So
yep.
Bye-bye.
Thanks everyone.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.